This is the Financial Sense News Hour with the president of PFS Group, Jim Poplava. Since 1982, PFS Group has offered asset management and educational resources that have helped investors build, maintain, and preserve their wealth. Now, here's the Financial Sense News team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
The Fed is keeping rates on hold, as we expected, between 0.25 and 0.5%. And they say they're closely monitoring developments overseas and in financial markets. This is a sign that they've become worried about whether the economic outlook is shifting in light of falling stock prices, falling oil prices, and uncertainty about China. At this point, they're not taking a March rate increase off the table, but they're saying they're going to be spending the next few weeks trying to understand whether there's a fundamental shift in their forecasts. And if there is, they could be in delay mode for some time.
Fed met this week. That was the voice of John Hilzenrath from the Wall Street Journal. They met, no surprise, they left interest rates unchanged. At first, the markets rallied, and then as the statement was understood, the markets fell. So why don't we start with the statement, what they said and what changed?
I think just like that, John Hilzenrath, quote, John, probably the most significant thing they said was the committee is closely monitoring global economic and financial developments and is assessing their implications for the labor market and inflation and for the balance of risk to the outlook. That was probably the most significant one that they put in this. What the statement was essentially doing is trying to reassure the markets and investors is that they're seeing the same thing the markets are seeing, because that's a question that a lot of people were asking is, look, we got all this turmoil in the markets. It's been almost straight down since the beginning of the year. Oil prices continue to fall, and we'll talk about the correlation between oil and the market here in a bit. And so, and then China, there's talk about a major devaluation coming from China. Are you guys watching this? So basically, they're saying, hey, we're looking at the same thing. It more or less signaled renewed worries about financial market turbulence, hey, no kidding, and slow economic growth, as we saw on Friday. So they were telling the markets, we're not asleep. We're watching what's going on, but they didn't want to say uncle, John, and rule out raising short-term rates. So a lot of the bulls were disappointed on that. But there was no mention of their outlook being fundamentally changed or shifted in light of these developments since they raised rates a little over a month ago. So this isn't good because it shows they have doubts about their own convictions on their own economic forecast. What the monitoring statement did is tacitly acknowledge they may end up altering their plans for more rate hikes further on this year. And especially if we see this market turbulence and growth continues to slow both here and abroad, they also mentioned expectations for inflation are shifting down.
Jobs print this month, but economic growth slowed at the end of last year. Here's the key language to address everybody's concerns. We are closely monitoring global economic conditions and financial developments, assessing their implications for the labor market and inflation, and for the balance of risks. Read, we are aware of the strong dollar. We are aware that the Beige Book said that it's affecting exports in a lot of places. We are aware that that might continue to affect inflation.
Yeah, from Bloomberg this week. Now, given the weakness in the economy with today's GDP numbers and also the market turbulence that we're seeing, there's also a global slowdown in economic growth. Why not just say one raise, which they've already done, and call it done, one and done, or we're going to stand down rather than all of these nuances that they're doing, which are what are injecting the jitters?
You know, I think, you know, in fairness to them, they're in a tough spot, but of their own making. If they were going to raise rates, they should have probably done that earlier on in the economic cycle, probably somewhere between 2012 and 2013. They're rather late to the game right now, doing that now, this late in the business cycle. But had they reversed course abruptly after just raising rates, and I remember we spent the whole year, 12 months last year, talking about when are they going to do this? They finally went in December. they would not only lose confidence if they reverse themselves this month, but they could also have created a panic in the markets with their reversal in policy in so short of a time. They raised rates, and then a month later, if they indicated they were going to lower it, people are saying either one, they're inept, or number two, wow, there must be seeing something we don't see that is actually worse than expected. So they didn't want to correct something within a month. The December rate hike was probably the most telegraphed rate hike in history. So they have to be having, John, I would say, a real confidence issue right now. The Fed chairman is on Capitol Hill in just about 3 weeks in the semiannual Humphrey Hawkins testimony. In the March FOMC meeting, which will be the first FOMC meeting when the Fed will give updated forecasts on growth for the economy, their inflation expectations, and what they expect with unemployment. I believe they're going to, what you're going to see when that comes out, you're going to see a much lower forecast when they meet in March, and especially comments that they'll make, or Yellen will make in the press conference, especially given the GDP numbers that we got this Friday.
Well, you know, the fact that their forecasts are always more optimistic than the markets always seem to indicate, this should remind us that the futures market really has been a much better place when we try to assess what the Fed's actually going to wind up doing rather than their own pronouncements. So what are the futures markets saying now about coming rate hikes? Is it one and done? Are we going to see what? Praying and guessing through this as we did last year?
How about one and fun?
Well, followed by a wee, here we go, right? Yeah. I don't know.
You picture this roller coaster, you know, suddenly plunging down. You know what? The rate hike probabilities have fallen off a cliff during the first half of the year. They're probably flat for the second half of the year. It's amazing because we began this year, and especially when we go back just a month ago, everybody was expecting, okay, it's March because they just raised it in December. If we look at the futures markets, they're basing a probability of only about 19% that the Fed goes in March, 27% probability in April, in 41% probability in June. And I expect those numbers will be coming down, especially after the GDP numbers we just got. Now, as you head into the second half of the year, it really isn't, and I'm not buying this, well, maybe I could. In November, the probability goes up to a little almost 58%. So the Fed will be reluctant to be raising interest rates when they meet in September, right before a presidential election, because the politicians will be screaming, and especially with legislation on Capitol Hill to rein in the powers of the Fed. And then if you get to December, the probabilities go up to about 65%. So the numbers have been trending down with all of this market turmoil, and especially the poor economic reports that we've been getting. A good example is the economic report we got on this Friday. And John, that's a trend I expect to continue going forward, especially with the current quarter, fourth quarter GDP numbers. Now remember, this is the first pass. That number may change a little bit in the revisions. There's two more revisions that will come. So if you look at the Fed mandates on price to stability and economic growth, neither of those would warrant rate hikes. In fact, neither of them warranted rate hikes last December, or for that matter, any further rate hikes this year. But as we discussed last week on the program, the Fed is kind of going through this perverse logic, because when they went in December, people were saying, look, we don't have inflation, even you admit it, and it may not be to 2017 until you hit your 2% inflation goals. We certainly don't have robust economic growth, and we've got a slowing global economy and diverging economic policies. What the heck are you guys doing? And if you kind of parse through all their language, it was kind of like, well, we know another crisis could come around the corner, and if we get in another crisis, we need some ammo to deal with it. But that perverse logic is, by raising in the turmoil that they've done, they could actually cause the next crisis that they're preparing for without realizing what they're doing is really causing that next crisis. Basically, they're saying, hey, look, we want to be able to raise interest rates so we can lower them.
More than you had to, didn't you?
Sure.
Well, why did you do that? You work here. Don't you want good insurance?
Don't need it. Never been sick. Perfect immune system.
Okay, well, if you've never been sick, then you don't have any antibodies.
I don't need them. Superior genes. I'm a shrewd. And superior brain power. Through concentration, I can raise and lower my cholesterol at will.
Why would you want to raise your cholesterol?
So I can lower it.
That was a spoof.
We got that from a listener as a result of last week's show, because basically that's what they're saying. We want to raise it so we can lower it.
Well, I think they're hoping the whole platform come up with them. You know, if they raise it, then everything sort of comes up and then stabilizes. So if we do run into another crisis, then when they drop it, it'll have some effect. But, you know, if you look at the fact that with today's GDP numbers, it's apparent from the report that the economy is weakening again. And I know one of the things you follow are the leading economic indicators. They're basically saying right now we're still growing, but slowing. And worse, if the trend continues, the risk of a recession is continuing to rise on the basis of that, if we continue in this direction. There are a number of factors that are going to start weighing on the economy. And you have to recognize that every recession since World War II has been foretold by sharp declines in industrial production, corporate profits, and the stock market. And all three of those ill omens, sounds like something out of Macbeth, have aligned again. Industrial production has declined 10 of the past 12 months. It's now down 2% from the peak. The manufacturing sector in the economy is most likely in recession, and corporate profits peaked during the middle of the summer in 2014. Now, some would argue that it's mainly due to energy, but the rising dollar is also a big factor here.
And, you know, the other thing, too, is the stock market has nosedived since the beginning of the year, and that is something you don't want to underestimate. Remember, the markets have been more accurate in terms of what the Fed was going to do in raising rates. I mean, we started last year, they were going to raise in June. The futures market said, no way. Then they said, well, they're going to go in September, and the future market was saying, nah, I don't think so. Maybe towards the end of the year, which is what they did. So when you have all these things that are happening, a decline in industrial production, a peak in corporate profits, a falling stock market, these have been the characteristics that have defined recessions since the end of World War II. All three of those are in place. And a lot of people are saying, you know what? There's a lot of things going on right now. This is a lot more precarious than a lot more than what the financial media wants to acknowledge.
Well, the Fed's obviously looking at the headwinds of a stronger dollar, and that will clearly impact trade and exports. But really what's offsetting that is the fact that government is going to contribute to growth this year about 0.5%. The consumer is as strong as they've been in 10 years, and yeah, the banks are healthy, and the energy headwinds are basically, that's last year's news. So if you actually look going forward, right, the U.S. economy is going to go from headwinds to tailwind.
That was PIMCO's Michael Levy pointing about that's what we're looking at right now. The fall in industrial production, the rising dollar, the decline in corporate profits, slowing economic growth, possible devaluations, and a slowdown in the second largest economy in the world in China. These are all now turning into headwinds for the market compared to the tailwinds that we had with when, let's say, if you go back to 2012, where the ECB began loosening, they began a QE program, the Fed was going with QE, other central banks were all working in unison, creating this tailwind. And remember, the markets were a lot lower there. In other words, prices of stocks were much cheaper. But you also had a situation where, you know, a lot of other countries were using fiscal policy. There were a number of things that were going on that were positive for the market. Those things aren't in existence today. We've gone from tailwinds to headwinds. And the problem is this is running counter to the Fed's intent and reasoning for raising interest rates.
You know, you do hear more talk today about recession, which is really not good news if this is a political election year, which we know it is. And if you look at all of the factors, both here and abroad, the global economies, the markets, if you were to give us a broader picture, Jim, zoom out a bit, what does it look like? If forecasters are usually off, what bits of intelligence can we glean from all of the conflicting data and the views out there?
Well, I mean, a lot of times people ignore economic forecasts. Most of the time they think in linear fashion that things will just unfold in a straight and gradual progression. That's not the way the markets and the economy really work. So what is grabbing the attention, and I'm going to give you the bearish point of views first, is the January plunge in U.S. stock market is the worst two-week start on record. Now, if the bears are right, profits and economic growth in general are going to be weak this year in 2016. They have to, and given what's happened to the dollar, and most of the companies in the S&P and the Dow are international multinational companies. But even if the bears are wrong, the drop is making investors less willing to spend. Nobody knows what's going to happen next. We had a graph that we were looking at in our investment staff meeting this week, and it was consumer confidence in the stock market, John, and you could lay one graph over the other. They follow each other. Stock market goes up, consumer confidence goes up, stock market falls like it did last summer, confidence drops. It has an impact on people. So nobody knows what's going to happen next. The fact that economists have a particularly poor track record of calling turning points in growth only adds to a lot of this anxiety. Another factor, weakness is emanating from China, where pessimism has driven down the Chinese stock market around down close to 40%. And that's just since last summer versus, let's say, a 12% decline in the U.S. Also, with U.S. trade declining, there's been a sharp drop in the Baltic Dry Index, a measure of cargo shipping rates. Other factors, and we've seen this since the beginning of the year. You thought oil was bad in 2014, 2015. Well, oil prices got down to $26 a barrel. So oil prices are down, reflecting not just an increase in supply, but the speculation that the market has is it also reflects falling demand. Now, that's bad for businesses and workers in the U.S. oil patch. I think I mentioned that there were over 200,000 jobs that were lost in the energy patch last year. And if you listen to some of these earnings reports coming up, companies, even the majors, are still restructuring. So thousands of people are going to lose their job. And another way that a lot of this gets transmitted into the U.S. because there was this feeling, well, you know, that happens over there. That's not impacting us here because exports are only roughly about 13% of the U.S. economy. But when our economies weaken, world investors flood into the U.S. in search of higher returns. I mean, if you take a look at the spreads between what investors can get in the U.S. today, either on the corporate side or on the sovereign side, and you compare that to bond yields in Asia or in Europe, that's why money is flowing in here. Another way, the strong dollar is already showing up in a decline in import prices. Now, that's bad news for U.S. companies that compete with imports. Another factor, the Morgan Stanley Business Index fell this month to its lowest level since February of 2009. And a lot of people are losing faith. Auto sales, many believe, have peaked last year. They peaked somewhere around an annual run rate around 18,000. So that's something. Manufacturers, which are more sensitive to trouble abroad because more of their products are reliant on exports, they've seen a sharp drop in the main index of activity. And many believe the manufacturing sector, as reflected by the ISM reports, industrial production, is already in a recession. So, and the other thing too is even though unemployment has come down, profits have picked up, a lot of the counties across the country, 9 out of 10 counties, according to recent reports, are actually below pre-recession peaks that were reached back in 2007. Another factor that you've seen reflected in the fourth quarter, and you're going to see it reflected coming out of this Q1 earnings season, profits have been down, the biggest drop that we've seen since 2009. Now, a lot of that is reflected in energy companies. But according to Bloomberg data, all this is going on while the Federal Reserve has its finger on the interest rate trigger, and that's creating a lot of uncertainty. And they already raised the federal funds target rate, and what are we going to be speculating on here in the next 2 months? Are they going to raise interest rates in March? The futures market says no. They probably won't do that until the fall, but nonetheless, it's still creating a lot of uncertainty in the market. So, John, that right there is pretty much a summation of why a lot of the bears are out there that are saying that, you know, this isn't good. And there's also talk being raised about a possible recession.
Yeah, I guess now that my knees are thinking about knocking, given where we might be headed, is there any kind of a bright side to this story? Suppose we have it wrong, or some areas we could benefit from as far as investing's concerned?
Well, let's take the opposite side of the coin, and let's take the arguments of the bulls. The bulls would argue the economy has created millions of jobs since the last recession, including in the month of December, there were 292,000 jobs. This is the longest run of consecutive monthly employment gains in records going back to 1939. Now, the Bureau of Labor Statistics tracks an index of payrolls that consist of average hours worked per week, and they multiply that times the number of workers. It's up one-third from 6 years ago. Payroll growth, according to the bulls, you know, the stronger the employment report and wages are rising, that feeds into more job growth. The number of openings has more than doubled since 2010, the bulls would argue, to close to 5 million, indicating that even despite some of this turmoil and everything else, that employers are still hiring. There are more companies hiring workers to compensate for those that are, let's say, laying off workers like we're seeing in the energy sector. The other thing is they're arguing, yes, we've seen a uptick in unemployment filing claims. It's picked up a bit, but it's far below the averages. They also would argue, contrary to what the bears are saying, falling oil prices is good news because that means people are paying less. I think I was reading someplace, you'd never see this in California. California, we're finally breaking $3. In certain parts of the country, John, gasoline prices are down to $1.50. So the bulls would argue low gasoline is putting money in the vast majority of Americans' pocketbooks, so that's giving them more money to spend elsewhere. Even though it's ticked down, consumer sentiment is close to being the strongest in this business cycle, and there's really no hint of a bursting housing bubble. Housing remains strong. We got a lot of the existing home sales are looking very good. Affordability for the housing sector still remains good because of low mortgage rates. Even though the short-term end of the yield curve has gone up, the long end of the yield curve, which is related more directly to what you're going to pay in a mortgage, that has actually flattened. It has not gone up. So the bottom line, according to the bulls, is that 2016, the odds or likelihood of a recession is unlikely. In fact, the Conference Board's Index of Leading Economic Indicators points to some form of growth. It may not be strong, but it is at least growing. And the other thing, this is a bigger survey, the Philadelphia Fed survey, forecasters see only a small chance of the economy shrinking. So there you have kind of both sides of the argument. So here's what this really starts to boil down to. So unless the Fed persists with tightening path, the risk of recession this year are unlikely. But with economic growth weakening, here's a key point, as it is doing now, there's less of a shock absorber to handle any exogenous shocks to the economic system. And you can think back to 2011 when we had Fukushima, the Arab Spring, spiking oil prices, debt ceiling, downgrade of U.S. debt. We did not go into a recession because the economy was growing in the 2% plus range. When the economy is growing, you have a shock absorber to get through these exogenous events. The lower and lower that number becomes, the less leeway or the less shock-absorbing effects that you have left in the economy. So the economy and the markets right now, if we were to sum it up, are in a very fragile state right now. So there isn't much leeway for policy mistakes, which, by the way, was one of our wild cards for 2016. When we were looking at, one of them is a policy mistake, and they just say, we're going ahead anyway.
Well, you know, given these current trends that you're talking about, what do you think the likely outcomes are in all probability?
I mean, there are a number of possible outcomes being raised out there. They're depending on who you are listening to. What we don't know is the recent downdraft in stocks. Is it signaling a possible recession? If that is the correct assessment, then this just became one and done, and forget future rate hikes, especially with the bad number that we got on GDP. Experts like we had Ray Dalio think that the Fed's next move is not going to be raising rates. They're going to be going to QE4. Most of the damage in the economy and to profits has been mainly in the energy and mining sector. But right now, there is a 97% correlation that we're seeing between the price of oil and the stock markets. One of the reasons the market was up partially this week was the run-up in oil prices back over $30 a barrel. So what a lot of people are saying is we don't know whether oil is falling because of excess supply, we're producing too much, or what traders are watching, is it the decline in oil more to do with a slowing economy, both here in the U.S. and globally? And the problem, the Fed is doing some posturing here. They don't want to give the impression they are swayed solely by the financial markets, which may be a wrong strategy because it leads to hawkish or maybe more bearish expectations. If you expect them to do something, you take action. It's just like I mentioned earlier, we see a lot of correlations between consumer confidence and what's happening in stock prices. You lay the chart of confidence over the S&P 500 and it matches. I mean, you know, it's natural. When you're seeing the stock market going up, you're seeing your 401k plan go up, housing prices are rising, you're feeling good about spending money. Stock market plunging 500 points a day like it did in the month of August, all of a sudden, you know, no surprise, we got a weak retail season in the fourth quarter with all that turmoil in August and September. So it does have some bearing on what could happen going forward.
If we look at the various market opinions, what do you think the experts are saying, including your own opinions? Which direction are we headed?
I mean, if you sum it all up, you take the investment strategists, a lot of the people that I respect, there's basically five possible outcomes that people are looking at. The first scenario, let's call this scenario one, the economy falls into recession, industrial production peaks, profits peak, stock markets fall. This implies, and what we're seeing right now, given all three of these present, in the past, when these three items were present, since World War II, it was basically we were heading into a recession. In this scenario, the Fed made a mistake by raising rates in December and sticking, as they did in this FOMC meeting, not implying, hey, we're watching this stuff, but not any change in policy. That's probably what I call scenario one. Now, scenario two is the economy slows down, as we saw in the GDP numbers we got on Friday, but it begins to stabilize. And also, it's just enough growth. If you're growing at 1% or close to it, it's just enough to keep you out of a recession. And under this scenario, financial markets stabilize, but this limits the Fed to just one or maybe two rate hikes this year. Now, this is what we're seeing in the futures market when you look in the second half of the year, when you look at the months of September and December. The odds or probabilities are between 50 and over 60%, so over 60% when you get to December. So that is scenario two. The third scenario is financial markets begin to stabilize, economic growth is sufficient enough to keep unemployment rate down further. This is the Fed's own scenario, and this kind of more or less lines up with the Fed's own forecast, where markets get used to gradual hikes, and the Fed raises four times as they forecast in December. Now, well, I'll get to my own feeling in just a moment here. The fourth scenario is financial markets stabilize, the economy grows slowly, keeping us out of a recession, but inflation begins to accelerate due to rising wages and a stabilization of oil prices. Under this scenario, the Fed raises interest rates four times because inflation is rising. And it wouldn't take much to get those numbers up because when you have oil prices all the way down as low as they were, let's say, a little over a week ago when they were down to $26 a barrel, what if oil prices go back to where they were in the fourth quarter, 40-50. You're talking about a 30-40% increase in energy prices. You would see that reflected in inflation numbers, gasoline numbers. So that's scenario number four, the return of inflation. Scenario number five, under this one, the financial markets go on a roller coaster ride, let's say in the first half of the year, remaining volatile and choppy, pretty much what we've seen since the beginning of the year. Now, this puts the Fed on hold and possibly a risk management mode, because they're going, when you're seeing a devaluation, you're seeing the dollar rise, profits come down, the stock market gyrating, you know what? You're going to become less hawkish. So the Fed goes on pause. That calms the market, stops the decelerating trend in the economy and the markets and profits. But as things begin to improve later on in the year, they begin to hike rates, maybe September, maybe December. Now, this lines up with the futures market that we're seeing right now. This view also probably lines up more with our own views in terms of what we see. Right now, the financial experts and traders are caught up between, let's say, scenario one and scenario two. But I see things moving more towards the last scenario. For this to play out, we're going to have to watch what happens next month on Capitol Hill. Yellen's going to be up there for her semi-annual testimony. And also, more importantly, what the Fed's going to say in their FOMC meeting coming up in March. That's when they actually update their forecast for the year on the economy. The dot plots will see that. What are they thinking in terms of future rate hikes? If that number comes down, GDP numbers come down, inflation numbers come down, which they hinted at in this statement. This is a year where there isn't, once again, any room for error, which is why we're playing defense right now, which is how you want to play this, because right now there's just too much uncertainty.
You're listening to the Financial Sense News Hour at financialsense.com.
You know, Financial Sense News Hour listeners should remember that our premium members are able to hear the weekday Financial Sense News Hour, featuring interviews with top economic commentators and experts. If you're not a member, here's one of the interviews you missed this week.
Cliff Droke, the editor of Momentum Strategies Report, which is a newsletter covering the broad U.S. equity market and a longtime contributor to Financial Sense, joins us on the show today. And Cliff, let's talk about your market outlook. I know that you look at internal indicators, which give an indication of the health of the market, moving averages. You have your new economy index, which I'd like to get an update from you as well, which looks at some of the major companies that comprise the U.S. economy and give a real good read on what's happening here in the U.S., both from an economic and a financial standpoint. Let's start just by talking about where you think we are currently with the stock market. A lot of strategists and technicians that we've been having on the show believe that we have seen a major top, and that that took place likely in 2015. I believe in May was when we saw the ultimate peak, and that, you know, we might see a small relief rally here from oversold conditions, but are not expecting a lot of upside, and that we're probably going to see another down leg lower in the market this year. What are your thoughts, given some of the things that you're looking at?
Well, Chris, normally I don't like to join the consensus, but this time I tend to agree with them. I think we have seen a major top that was established in 2015. If you go back to probably the spring, April or May of 2015, is when we started to see a lot of internal selling pressure in the form of new 52-week lows on the NYSE. They started expanding pretty significantly. And that was a kind of a tip-off that there was some informed selling taking place. And then finally, the indices broke down in August. And since then, we have not been able to recover any of those highs. So certainly, a top of major proportions was established last year. I do believe the bear market is still underway. And yes, we are oversold at the time of this interview, and we could see a bear market rally. But until we see signs of major capitulation among the investors, I don't think we've seen the end of the bear market yet.
So this brings us back to square one, and really a reprise of last year, where we play a guessing game as to whether, when, and how much the Fed will raise interest rates, which, of course, is what's injecting a lot of the instability in the markets.
You know, John, a lot depends on the markets and the economy, especially the kind of economic numbers that we're going to start to see. And what the Fed doesn't realize, and this is important, is that the Fed is a key reason markets have plunged and the risk of a recession has risen. Even though it is low at this point, you have more people talking about it. Remember the three factors that have contributed to every recession since World War II: declining industrial production, declining profits, and declining markets. We have all three of those going on right now. The headline news out there is about China, emerging markets. We're talking about oil. However, what we don't realize is Fed policy works through a constellation of financial conditions. It doesn't just include stock prices. It has to do with corporate bond yields, which have risen substantially. It has to do with currency exchange rates. The dollar's up over 20% against major currencies. And also the risk appetite for investors in companies themselves. If you're feeling squeamish about the economy and where we're heading, if you're a company, you're probably not about to go out and make huge expenditures, build new plant or equipment. You're going to be rather cautious and try to protect your margins. So, I mean, every business cycle has its own characteristics with it in terms of investments and financial accesses. In the 80s, it was corporate mergers. In the 90s, it was the tech bubble. In the last decade, it was the real estate bubble. All of these led to some form of boom. Think of the tech boom. Think of the real estate boom of the last decade. But here's the thing. The Fed cannot determine the breadth of that boom, nor can it dictate the scale of the bust.
Okay, but explain why the markets then are so vulnerable at just a quarter point rate hike. You wouldn't think it would affect them that much.
You know, unfortunately, as I just stated, it has been more than just a quarter point hike. I mean, a lot of people are saying that. Gosh, and the Fed is probably saying that themselves. Gosh, we only raised it a quarter point. Why all this turmoil? But I mean, look at it this way. There has been substantial tightening much beyond the quarter point, and that's what people aren't focusing on. The dollar is up over 20% against major currencies, so that acts as a tightening impact, impacting especially the manufacturing sector and corporate profits. And if it continues, what will happen? And we've seen this in the uptick in unemployment claims. If companies start losing money, they're going to move to protect margins. And the way they're going to do that, they're going to start laying off workers. The unemployment rate is a lagging indicator. The other thing that we've seen that's very important for financing is corporate bond spreads, especially on junk bond yields, have widened by 3 percentage points. I mean, that is a big deal. And the market is down, you know, between 8 and 10% of the year. Now, those are the indexes. And the problem with the indexes is the Dow is a price-weighted index. The S&P is a market cap-weighted index. And it really hides what's occurring underneath the surface, as so many of our technicians have talked here on the program. The broader markets, the stocks within the index, are down over 20%. We covered that last week. The number of percentage of stocks that are down 20%, 30%. And also, you may not think of it this way, but a lot of the devaluation and the capital flight out of China is related to the Fed policy. I mean, China pegs its currency, like Saudi Arabia, to the U.S. dollar. So as the dollar rises over 20%, that means China's currency has risen over 20%. So it has the Fed's fingerprints on it. So even though the rate hike was only a quarter of a point, the actual tightening has been closer to 3 percentage points, and the Atlanta Fed acknowledges as much in its own shadow funds rate, which is up 3 percentage points. So as you take a look at what the Fed has done, it is having a cumulative impact of its decisions, because since it began with taper, corporate profits peaked in the middle of the summer of 2014, and that's when the dollar began its present rise of over 20%. It began in the summer of 2014. So the economy and markets, John, are just much too fragile to withstand the tightening.
What's just as important, if not more important, is the fragility of the markets right now. And so the fact that the fact that you get a 25 basis point rate hike last month and the markets go crazy, even though that was probably the most well-telegraphed rate hike of all time, it just shows that the tough spot here that markets are in right now. And so getting back to Anastasia's point, when you have such the dollar strengthening at the pace that it is right now, it's filtering over into the economic data. You're seeing manufacturing has been really struggling recently, mm-hmm. and if that continues, that's going to be another warning sign for the Fed.
Yeah, so what you're saying here, Jim, is that the markets have already tightened much greater than 0.25 point hike about the Fed. So what should we be watching then if we're trying to divine the oracle, so to speak, at the Fed's next move?
You know, I would be watching the markets. Three things I'd probably watch. I'd be watching stocks, I'd be watching corporate bond spreads, and also what's happening to the dollar. If they continue to raise rates and stocks fall lower, the Fed is in danger of causing something I call a negative feedback loop. And there were analysts at JP Morgan are warning of the beginning signs of that negative feedback loop developing already. And this is just taken from a recent report from JP Morgan. And I'm just quoting here, there is increasing risk that elevated volatility starts incurring enough technical damage to market psychology and spills over, negatively impacting investor, consumer, and business sentiment, resulting in a lack of risk-taking and eventually creating a negative feedback loop into the real economy. Going forward, we see the equity risk remaining asymmetric to the downside, and then they cite six reasons. Number one, rising risk of U.S. earnings recession. We're seeing that already. Number two, diverging central bank policies and a Fed that is trying to tighten, causing the U.S. dollar to strengthen. Number three, the U.S. manufacturing sector already in a recession territory and non-manufacturing sector continuing to decelerate. And that was one of the big things that was going last year, because a lot of the bears were reciting the ISM report going below 50, indicating the manufacturing sector was contracting. But the thing that was holding up was the service sector, and that's 70% of consumption makes up the U.S. economy. So the service sector was holding up, and now that's begun to decelerate. Number four, deteriorating macroeconomic backdrop with China posing a significant risk to global markets. Number five, credit spreads widening in the high yield market approaching recession levels. Six, late cycle dynamics, meaning the economy that is basically maturing. Number seven, continued elevated volatility likely to impact sentiment. And I refer back to the graph that we were looking at in our investment staff meeting this week, overlaying consumer sentiment with the stock market, because we're also looking at various sectors, especially the consumer discretionary sector, which is breaking down. And you're seeing that coincide and correlate with this breakdown in consumer confidence. And the other thing is they're saying that the VIX elevated above 20 could last for 6 months. This all makes for an unattractive background. So the Fed is playing, John, with fire here of its own making. And here's the problem with academics. You know, most economists use linear models, which changes follow this sort of gradual and predictable path. That's what models do. The problem is we live in a nonlinear world. And the problem after periods of stability, as we saw between, let's say, 2012 and 2014, in monetary stimulus, we begin to experience financial tremors. We start seeing tremors, then the tremors turn into quakes in the financial market. And once they start building on each other, you eventually breach a fault line, which sends shockwaves that weaken other fault lines, which weaken the financial system, spreading to vulnerabilities throughout the whole system. So right now, China is posing a major risk to markets, including the U.S., and a shockwave from China could test all global fault lines. And we got sort of a glimpse of that last August. So the more the Fed persists, the greater the risk of a shockwave coming from China.
So if they can't raise interest rates, then what are they going to do the next time a major crisis hits? Because theoretically, they're trying to provide themselves some wiggle room here.
Central banks and monetary policy and economic policy have to create the demand. And the mechanism, like in 1937, is such that through quantitative easing, fiscal policy, something or other, these are all cycles.
Yeah.
And we all go past through the cycles, and we all get done. And sometimes we have a debt restructuring. We work ourselves through that. So I think when I say pessimistic, I want to be clear that I think that the risks are asymmetric so much on the downside.
Yes.
And I think that the awareness of that asymmetry is very important by central banks and even fiscal policymakers at this time. That's the main thing. I don't want to, the moods can trap investors.
Right.
Because what happens is they're too responsive. Mutual funds will tend to sell in response to these things. I don't want to prompt concern, but I do want to prompt an analysis of the question of the decreased effectiveness of monetary policy in a contraction. This will be a negative for the economy, this market movement, and that'll mean, as we look at that, that the Fed should remain flexible, right? It shouldn't be so wedded to a path.
I think they're not. We've already heard some of that from some of the people who have spoken.
Well, a little bit concerns me is the lack of these concerns 6 or 12 months ago. Because the forces behind that existed 6 or 12 months ago. So I think, anyway, I hope you're right.
Bottom line is, Ray, that the Fed's arsenal is compromised at this point, and what they do have left is not going to be as effective as we would like.
Yes, I believe so.
Ray Dalio from Bridgewater Associates. But what we're saying right here is it's really back to another round of quantitative easing.
Well, I mean, especially if they can't get beyond one rate hike or two rate hikes. I think if they go for four rate hikes, they're crazy. They're going to push us off the cliff. So if they only go for one and done and basically go on pause, we could probably pull out of this. But if they persist, and remember, these guys are academics. And remember the saying that we have here on the program, the Fed keeps doing something until they break something, usually in the economy or the financial markets. Well, they've broken the manufacturing economy. That's in a recession as a result of the rising dollar. U.S. profits are in a recession now. They peaked in the summer of 2014, the result of a rising dollar and as well as the recession in the energy industry. So that's already impacting that. So if they keep going in this direction, they're already breaking a number of things. Things are starting to break. And once again, what is really at risk here is they put us in a negative feedback loop. John, and you could probably share with our listeners, the analogy I think of here is, when you're in a plane and all of a sudden your plane goes into a nosedive, if you don't quickly try to pull it out of a nosedive, it's over. You crash.
Yeah, you're on a limited clock there, so to speak, either a dive or a spin, and it tends to accelerate over time, and there's a limited amount of time. And then even pulling out of it, if you're not careful, you can tear the wings off the plane. So that wouldn't be desirable either. The wings would go back up and the rest of the plane would go down.
You know, we started coming out of the last crisis with a combination of fiscal policy combined with monetary policy. And a lot of the critics of the administration have said, we need a good fiscal policy. You can't just combine monetary policy. There's a limit in terms of what monetary policy can do. And unfortunately, the fiscal stimulus was poorly constructed and it failed. And because it was mainly made up of transfer payments. And, the problem with the transfer payment, once you give somebody a transfer payment, they spend the money, then what do? You got to give them another transfer payment. So that's why that doesn't work. So what was left after the failure of the stimulus was monetary stimulus, which is less effective when it is done by itself without the fiscal stimulus. So you have to create some kind of incentives for investing versus transfer payments. So a lot, John, I think is going to depend on the outcome of the next election, where we could experience either a shallow recession or maybe avoid one, or in fact be a depression. I mean, depending on which candidate you're looking at a 50% increase in the capital gains rate. You're looking at a 5% surtax on anybody over a certain level of income. You're talking about lowering the estate tax exemption. You're talking about capping drug costs. And that's just one candidate. The other candidate wants to take tax rates to 90% and cap all income on $1 million and make everything free. So, I mean, folks, anytime the government says there's something free, hold on to your wallet. Somebody is going to pay for that. And it's not just rich folks. So a lot, John, is going to be resting here on the recession. And the markets are going to start to pick up on this. And we've seen this in the pullback that we've seen in healthcare stocks and especially the biotech industry when both Sanders and Clinton talked about capping or limiting the price on prescription drugs. Now, they'd have a hard time getting that through Congress, but it's enough to scare investors. So this is another wild card out there. You don't know how. I mean, John, you've been covering the news for, what, several decades now. Have you ever seen an election cycle this crazy?
No, it's really crazy because if you look at the alternatives we're being given, I don't think there's anything terrific. I keep thinking that to myself, you know. And of course, the country is a lot more, they talk about being intensely divided. What you're seeing are two different worldviews trying to grab control of the airplane, shall we say, since we're using airplane analogies. And they sort of tug back and forth, but we never stay going in any one direction. And so that's why, as the fight goes on, you know, it's like the airplane's headed to the ground, and in the back, the people are yelling, pull up, but in the front, they're fighting over the controls. So what are you going to do? But summing it all up, Jim, it looks as if we boil this all down to the Fed, the markets, and the great guessing game, because we're probably going to be back into it again this year. I mean, the Fed seemingly, according to what you've been saying here, has tightened much more than is suggested by the one quarter point hike through transmission of its policies through the financial markets, by a rising dollar, rising corporate bond rates, and the stock market. And the futures markets are really telling us that rate hikes in H1 are not likely given the slowdown we're seeing in the economy and the weakness in the market. So putting all this together, we should probably anticipate more tremors, more shockwaves in the financial system that will come periodically. And if we recognize that that's where we're at, investors have to make decisions. So what should they do at this point as we wait and guess as to what the Fed will be doing next?
You know, John, I would say the best thing to do is, you know, what we're doing right now, we're playing defense. We're going into short-term corporate bonds because I don't like sovereigns. You get nothing right now in sovereigns. I mean, I don't care if you look here, whether you're looking at treasury bills or treasury notes, or even worse, if you go overseas, you know, you're going to have to pay the government to borrow money. So it's basically a defensive posture right here because there's so many multiple outcomes. We talked about five possible scenarios here. And quite honestly, I don't think there's anybody smart enough to figure it all out because we don't know what the heck they're thinking. And you don't know what exogenous shock. I mean, we could wake up one morning like we did in August and the Chinese could devalue their currency one fell swoop by 10-15%. Now think of the shockwaves that would send throughout Asia because it would trigger a wave of devaluations. So you have things like that. It could be a geopolitical event. So we don't recommend you get completely out of stocks. Never would, because if you do that, you're assuming you're getting out at the top and you're going to be smart enough to get in at the bottom. And there's too many people that have got out and never got back in. Once you're out, very unlikely you're going to get back in. But if you're in equities and especially good dividend paying stocks, you're retired, you need and live off that income, you know, stay put, hold on to it. If you're looking at stocks, we like things like consumer staples, things that are more predictable in a market like this. We like corporate bonds, as I mentioned. So we're playing real defensive right here. And you don't want to be, once again, completely out of stocks, because how do you know at the March meeting or at the February meeting on Capitol Hill, the Fed will finally come to its senses and say, holy cow, look what's happening here. If we don't get control of this now, we're going to lose control of this and our worst nightmares will be facing us. Because right now, they only have one bullet in the chamber. That's not very much. And so that's why you have to play defense. I mean, of all the scenarios that we've looked at, we think the fifth scenario that we talked about, where it's a really rough, rocky, and volatile first half of the year, the Fed goes on pause, which should help to stabilize the markets and the economy and also the rising dollar. That will take a lot of pressure off the corporate bond market. It'll take a lot of pressure off the emerging markets. So that would help a lot. And if that does, you know, maybe it's a better story for the second half. And we could very much end up very much looking, John, like we did in 2011, where we had all these shocks going through the system. Think of all the things that were going on that year. Arab Spring, Fukushima, oil prices over 100. I think WTI got over 110. The U.S. lost its AAA rating on bonds, the pig crisis in Europe, the debt ceiling default, all that stuff going on. And the market fell 20%. The LEIs rolled over into recession territory. Had you gotten completely out of the market, you would have missed the big run-up that we saw in the second half of the year, where the market breaking basically even for the year. And that's the kind of market that we live in right now. This is part of what we call the new normal, because you never know how this thing is playing out. Now, if anybody out there is telling you, hey, go all in one direction, be very wary of that. That somebody is that smart, they figured this all out, and they're going to tell you when to get out at the top and when to get in at the bottom. And when you do get back in, they're going to tell you where you want to be. So you want to be on a little bit on the defensive side here and allow yourself some breathing room and leeway, but you don't want to be in something that you're going to get zero interest. And that's why we like laddered short-term corporate bonds in the 1-3 year range, where you can make, you know, close to 4%. And, you know, that's 4%. I never thought 4% would sound like a lot. But in this kind of market, when we're dealing with zero interest rates, 4% is a lot of money. So, John, in summing this up, I would be playing defense.
Well, as we're playing defense, Jim, and we look forward to the weeks to come, I guess the decision on what the Fed's going to do isn't right on our doorstep. What do we have coming up next week?
Next week, we're going to get unemployment numbers for the month of January. That's going to be very important, because the market sort of rallied with those unemployment numbers. There were 292,000 jobs in the month of December. So that was why I think the Fed was getting a lot of confidence. If those numbers start to roll over and pull back or disappoint, given the disappointing GDP number that we just got, you know, if you look at all the economic reports, GDP and the unemployment are probably the two big ones. The other ones are just kind of noise, but those are the two big ones you want to watch. We're going to get a glimpse of that next Friday. So that is going to be something to watch. And also, we're still in the middle of corporate earnings season, so watch what companies are starting to say. All of that is going to be coming up in the week ahead. And then, of course, in the month of February, if this turbulence continues, watch for Yellen to change her tune when she spends 2 days on Capitol Hill testifying to both houses in Congress. So that's coming up in the weeks ahead. We'll be here to talk about it. And of course, you got Super Bowl coming up, so that will be something we will be talking about as well. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining. What?
I said go Broncos.
Yeah, go back. Go Broncos. My team didn't make it to the playoffs.
Yeah,
this year,
I know.
So what can I say?
I know it didn't. Yeah, okay.
In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on the Financial Sense News Hour. Until you and I talk again, well, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.